I want to devote my short remarks this morning is a private group of Dr. Burton. Since no one ever opened it up fully, even his closest friends knew, who thought that they knew Dr. Burton well, did not glance into this book. It was very hard to gain an insight into Dr. Burton's complex personality, into his rich, powerful, and at times enigmatic, I mean, with your permission, say, antithetic personality. The private book of Dr. Burton remained a safe haven for some, a sealed mysterious book. Let us have it now, to the last opportunity, before we bid farewell to so read a few pages in that private book. He didn't confide in me again, and we know very little about it. Let me try to give an insight into it. First question of the private group. Who was it? Not what we are it. Who was it? I don't know. A certain voice. I would like to use a certain voice. I'm safe at work, but I don't know. In order to portray Dr. Burton. It's a verse consisting of five words. The title of those five words tell the story of Dr. Burton. Who you just read those four, five words in their gather? Adami Ebidobi, Vajiri Mitzvahim. And I'm interpreting in accordance with the Rashbam in the Blazer. Praying, wandering, restless Aramean was my father. And he went down to Egypt. Puzzling sentence, very matter. Who was Obi, who was my father, who was a restless Aramean? Some say the Pasuk refers to Abraham. Some say Jacob, some say Joseph, a restless wanderer, wandering Aramean, who was my father, my teacher, my leader, Joseph, and his restlessness, because he was restless, he went to Egypt, was taken to Egypt. Why was Joseph an idiot, a restless fellow? Because he was a dreamer, a visioner. We all know that he dreamt of many things, many. He dreamt of crops, harvest, and sheaves. He also dreamt of distant stars and moons. He dreamt of material things as well as of spiritual values. Let me paraphrase this puzzle. A restless Lithuanian Yeshiva Talmid student was my friend, Dr. Burton. You always reminded me of Joseph of old. He also dreamt. He also beheld a vision. Whenever I entered his room unannounced, I didn't do it physically. I used to find him dreaming. I simply saw him gleam in his eyes. His glance used to be fixed on something far, and on something unknown to me, please. Now the question is, what did he dream about? He was an Aramean, a restless Lithuanian. What did you dream about? You dreamt of a generation of young American Jews who would combine both an excellent Torah education. And let me tell you, Dr. Dawkins, standards of wonders of halachic scholarship were very high, and we were. He dreamt, of a generation of young American Jews who would combine both an excellent Torah education with the capability of participating in the scientifically oriented and technologically minded complex American economy. He used to tell me, Talmid Chachamim must not be denied the many career opportunities offered to the average American boy who attends another American academic institution. Then he used to tell me many times, if we expect our plans concerning a thriving, dynamic, self-respecting Jewish religious community to come true, then we must secretly develop the Jewish religious community, be integrated in the very economy of our country, enjoying its blessings in full. It must not remain at the periphery and be envious of those who are in the center. Yeah, this is the dream of the sheaves, who worship in the middle, the other sheaves on the periphery. This was the first part of his dream. Then, his dream was not as bold as the second dream which I'm going to speak about. Another question arose. Who is supposed to provide the Bnei Torah, the Talmud HaChachamim, with the scientific training? Practical people said, let us teach them Torah and let them study medicine, physics, biology, etc. in secular and non-Jewish institutions. However, Dr. Belkin, the restless spirit, the Avami age, the restless nomad, had another dream. And the second dream was bolder, more daring than the first dream. This was his original dream. No one shared his opinion, not even people who were very close to him. Dr. Belkin used to tell me, if they care, why can't we? He wanted to show to the Jewish as well as the non-Jewish community that the Orthodox Jew is capable of establishing scientific educational institutions as the non-Jew or the secular Jew is. He told me once that when he presented the plan of a medical school under the auspices of the yeshiva to an internationally known abdominal Jewish surgeon, the latter became so indignant that he said the whole project is not only impractical, but elegant as well. And perhaps he was right, the surgeon. It was evident. And let me tell you, the restless yeshiva student of Lithuania, who was indeed, I knew well, a tough American. However, his evidence was translated into reality. And isn't the Jew an elegant person? confined for thousands of years the whole world, and even people in Israel have never been a nation, defying the United Nations and the world. Let me repeat the question, and I'll give the first answer to this question. Who was he? Answer number one, he was a restless, stirred from his way. Who dreamt of moons and stars, of heaven and earth?
Along a straight line.
neither are animals, nor are killers, nor are foreigners. He sees into us two-dimensionally. His cold, so to say, is cold of arms, his numbers, the symbol of his numbers, who was the geometric plane. He did not engage in the so-called analysis of death. He had no trust in the thin obstructions of three-dimensional thinking. But whatever he said was logical, was plain, was understandable. The fact that he was an excellent teacher shows something else. Not only scholarship, but more than that. Whoever one cannot teach for, cannot teach anything, but particularly valid with regard to Torah. One cannot teach Torah without being only fully unreservedly committed to it. There is no teaching without love. When I say love, I mean love of the student and love of the subject matter of the Torah one teaches. One cannot pursue knowledge unless the latter is part of himself, an integral part of himself. A teacher who is not involved, let me say not totally involved, in the Torah, he teaches will never succeed. To teach means to get through to the pupil, to the tender personality. How can one get through without love? And after doubting love to Torah, who was devoted to her with all his mind, with all his heart, with all his soul, there is not a single exaggeration in my statement. He is responsible for the fact only that the Shiva Sabbath Kochonan now, as of today, is a great center of Torah, and that as far as the attainment of wonders, good, real, genuine scholarship, is concerned, it is the best place in the United States. Just, you don't have to believe me, just take a look. And the young Russian yeshivas, who sit right to my, over there, to my right, they were playing right here. They are the finest Russian yeshivas. Any institution, here or in Israel, any institution, now, at present, or 100 years ago, would take or would have taken pride in them. Where were the trained, as I said, here? Of course, they were trained by the faculty of the Russian issue. Or there. But all that transpired under his banner. He carried his banner. He imbued us in spirit with the faith and with the optimistic view that would finally emerge before us. We tell a story about Marshal Foch, the commander-in-chief of the Allied forces in the First World War. He was asked once, after winning the decisive battle, whether he takes credit for himself for the victory. He answered, "That I don't know, I did not answer. However, I do know something else, which is relevant to the question, had the battle been lost, I would have been blamed. And what would I say about that parochial? Lindsay, should he take credit or should he give him credit now? For the fact that hundreds of young American boys came in the state of ignorance to the yeshiva where the yeshiva is wandering? Or credit is not, we don't owe him any credit? I don't know, very much so first said. But I know very well that the yeshiva failed, he would have been right. That means credit is to him. He was a Yeshiva par excellence. Answer number two to the question, who was he? He was a restless, a winner, he was an excellent teacher, and he was in love with everyone else. It almost, it is great, isn't it? And it was years ago, if one can engage in an empire star, he's happy. Yeah, but now let me ask the second question. Who was this restless teacher, Rosh Yeshiva, and mother of the Torah? Who was it then? We would like to learn more about him. But let us call it, please, personality. Let me give another example. He was, Dr. Dalton was, Dr. Dalton was a charming person. He radiated, I'll use the biblical expression for it, faith. The restless teacher, the mother of Torah, like Joseph of old, again, attracted people. He was indeed charming. He enchanted them. This is magnetic personality. Even though you disagreed with him, and quite often I disagreed with him, quite often, even those who disagreed with him succumbed to his powerful charm. The biggest gift, the imperils of the life. What is hate? In contradistinction to joy, to beauty. Fame, charm, flows from within, while beauty is an external trait of a person. While the latter is not indicative of any personalistic greatness, fame reflects an inner charisma, a rich personality that inspires the human being. And after Belkin indeed was a charismatic personality, therefore he attracted people. Let me just analyze Dr. Belkin's charisma. What was his charm? What did it consist of? The charisma Dr. Belkin possessed, it was precipitated by two basic virtues. Virtue number one, what means the biblical expression for it, he was about chesed, he was a man of loving kindness. He was a kind person. And let me say, his kindness was not due to character weakness. Sometimes people are kind because they are weak. Or character softness, sometimes people are kind because they are soft. Dr. Belkin was not a weak person. you are fine, he said before, and firm. He was a man who exercised power and right power. The day he died, he would be met as another flag. But nevertheless, he was a kind person. He personified kindness. He helped people in distress. He practiced what a pilot calls, giving instructions in the morning and the good day, kindness as far as money is concerned, and kindness as far as physical efforts are concerned. When he was the young teacher, and I came to that institution with a bigger salary, which was not always paid on time, he used to give away money, the last money, to poor students. There are a number of students who have who could confirm my story, right in the hall. And many students told me, many boys told me, that if not for Dr. Belton's helping hand, he would have never completed their studies. He, in spite of the fact that he was not sentimental, had the ability to share in the pain or in the misery. He had the ability, some of the experience, to distress other people. He had an open hand, an open pocket, and an open heart. Without being overwhelmed by sentiment. There is a he never expected people, the people whom he helped, to reciprocate. And hardly few reciprocate. Hardly few. He just did what he felt he should do and dismissed the whole incident from his mind. If there was a person who was not appreciated by his own friend, this was Dr. Belton. He was the most unappreciated, restless dreamer, an excellent teacher, and kind person, the most unappreciated in the world. Of course, the one who addressed me again, what else was he? Right, he was a good teacher, a dreamer, an excellent teacher. A kind person, the moral story. What else was it? How can you say? He was, and this will come as a surprise to many of you in the hall, he was a saintly person. He possessed saintliness. I don't say holiness, I say saintliness. Kindness alone does not generate or precipitate charismatic charm, favor. Unless it is tightly knit with saintliness. And Dr. Belton was the saintly person. And I understand that he asked me, in what manner and what respect did he manifest saintliness? How dare you? In four respects. First, he was a saintly butler. He hated gain. You know the biblical expression, saintly butler. To hate gain, to hate pride, to hate money. A saintly person is a saintly butler. An And Dr. Dogen, while he knew the importance of money as far as the institution was concerned, he had no concept for and no desire for money as far as he himself was concerned. I remember my wife of blessed memory used to rebuke him quite often, actually preach to him and criticize him for his complete indifference concerning his own financial security. She used to quote the verse of Song of Songs of Shir HaShirim, "Samun in Eteva et Hachamim, Tam Yishalim in Eteva, who made me keeper of the vineyard, forever my own vineyard, I did not keep well." And after Dokin used to promise with a smile, with a charming smile, to mend the ways, and to care a little more and to worry not only about the yeshiva budget, but about himself as well. Of course, he never kept his word. Never. His promise, and I believe, I don't know what I mean, he died in Pune. He died a poor man because he was a simple man. He was a simple man because he was a great man, and he died a great man. He simply was a single potter. He who raised so much money, who was a widow. A widow as a fund of Israel. He had imagination and sleep pertaining to the financial security of the institution, who was a plain now using a Hebrew colloquial, a plain butler, disregard to his own interests and needs. And vividly I remind myself of the psalm, of the shame we call a living, the one way I, the Allah, the big day, the same place, the many, Yahin, the soil of Hashem, the Atari of the world. My God, as far as I'm concerned, I don't excite myself in things too great or in things too wonderful for me. I have not whatever I have, and I don't ask for more. However, as far as Israel is concerned, as the people is concerned, I want more and more. As far as Israel is concerned, my fantasy, my imagination is with the quest. Yahweh is Yisroel Rav Hashem. May I come out alone from this time forward and forever. Dr. Dalton was a saintly person for a different reason. Dr. Dalton lived a simple life. It's very hard to find people nowadays who are satisfied with a simple life, plain simple life. Dr. Dalton lived a simple life because he was a simple man, a great man, but a simple man. His needs were few. The pleasure of gratification was limited. The saintly person has the capacity to withdraw from certain situations, to withdraw from luxury. Dr. Belton knew the secret of this prayer, but we call it a little preacher. There was not a single particle of hedonism in him, Dr. Dalton. He was not Ik weet niet waar gaat dat moet in de kastje moeten langzamen op de zaal. Ik weet dat zelfs van ons zullen. Mijn stukje, wat al lachen kunnen, dan niet in de toilet. Er was een streek aan mijn zet in zo'n beetje. Een streek. Prisje aan mij. Die niet naar te enjoy life, was een nee, die hard enjoy life. But to create, to serve, and to sacrifice, and to die on the altar of God. He had faith with us. He could live a life stripped up of mother and fields and petty enjoyment. He hated the formalities, I know that. Some people misunderstood. He hated the formalities, the protocol, and the public etiquette, even though from time to time we had to go off with it. But he never enjoyed it. He was indeed a sinful man. Dr. Dawkins was a sinful man for a third reason. He had, what shall I say, I'm using the Hebrew term, a Russian material, a dignified speech. Judaism has always emphasized the significance of the word. The latter is utter to his dignity and sanctity, may create the world. The latter, the word, out of his vulgarity, may destroy the world. Dr. Dawkins' speech was clean and dignified. I've never heard him malign anybody, or make some derogatory remarks about people, enemies, who indeed wanted to destroy him, indeed wanted to destroy him, physically and spiritually. He never said a bad word about him. He was also a simple person. In his relationship to his soul. Dr. Dawkins knew how to accept suffering. He suffered his dignity. Dr. Dawkins knew, they said, to suffer, how to meet the crisis, and how to confront disaster. He never complained. I've never heard of it. I've never heard a single complaint. He never complained. He never asked any questions. He never engaged in self-righteous monologues. Vajidomaron and Aaron said nothing. The great man, the saint man, says nothing. He was silent after nothing. A saintly person must possess the heroic quality to appear mute at a time and one is ready to talk. Dr. Dawkins had all four virtues. He was both a tradition that I'm looking for. Russian material, and I've always said so. If he could kill you, he could destroy. The movement of the calling was known. He had dignified speech, clean dignified speech. In general, he was clean. In words, he was clean. And he knew how to suffer. That's why he had a charismatic personality. Faithfulness together with kindness made a charismatic personality. Of course, I could go on and on to follow him on. This time, so simple there, is happiness, particularly for me. Dr. Dinex, is she a collaboration? Dr. Dawkins will not be present and will not sit next to me. And will not whisper something into my ear. I can hardly visualize meeting the yeshiva in September before Rosh Hashanah, or in March and April before Pesach, without going back to the fish court. We didn't talk much to each other, but somehow his mere presence used to have a cathartic, redemptive influence. There was peace in me, and this feeling of peace was not contagious. And suddenly I used to find peace in myself. And I'm leaving the Russian yeshiva right here. To that mind, if I tell Dr. Dawkins in a few words. The Russian yeshiva here flew very long away. They need more of your person. They cannot separate. They cannot imagine the yeshiva without Dr. Dawkins. They prayed for you during the last 10 months of your illness. And they refused to accept the frightening news about the medical diagnosis. We simply refused to accept it. Even though that we deep down our heart, we knew that the problem was left. We acted like the disciples of Judah the Prince of Rabbeinu HaKodesh, who said that the great master who was about to die, calling the Rebbe race, his Dr. Becherev, whoever who brings the dead tidings that the master had died, who will be killed, whoever. I used to remember anyone who told me that my optimism is unfounded. However, it happened. We prayed for a miracle. We are apparently we were unworthy of the miracle. It happened. We got as just a bit of farewell. Rest assured. The Sura, the King Sayyidun Shokhan, we promised it. Yeshiva will be guarded now. And it will continue to be a great center of Torah. Your name will never be forgotten.
Most even the thought never. Juliana, captive, followed by his family. Rashi HaYeshiva, members of the various boards of the university, leading administrators and dignitaries of the world. The Nosei Aron pallbearers have been taken from among the earliest students and disciples of Dr. Hart. And all the core students who are here will follow. You may accompany the Aron until 180 seconds, where the hearse will hold sufficiently to allow all those who plan to go to the cemetery to get to their cars and join the funeral procession. Those who lack transportation, wish to attend the burial, should go to the entrance of the first hall building in 186th Street, where suitable provision has been made. As we are in the midst of the Passover festival, Shiva, which will be sat at the Belkin residence, Mrs. Abby Belkin and Lisa, 101 Central Park West, will begin Thursday evening at 7:45 p.m., continue Friday until 1 p.m. so that the family can prepare for Shabbos, and then resume at Sabbath's end Saturday evening at 7:45 p.m. through Wednesday morning after services at approximately 9 a.m. Morning and evening services will be held in Dr. Belkin's Zatzal's Hall. The Rashi HaYeshiva, the Estadrut Mosmache HaYeshiva, Rabbinical Atari, and the Talmidei HaYeshiva, thousands of students of our Yeshiva, have solemnly undertaken the study of the entire Mishnayos during Shloshim, the initial 30-day period of mourning, as well as Chalukat HaShas, the division and the completion of the study of the entire Talmud itself by the first Yerushalayim, the first anniversary of the passing of Horeinu Rabbeinu, Harav Yeshua ben Shlomo Kalman. Which will be part of our individual and collective dedication to the most sacred memory of Rabbi.